Blog Talk Radio.
Charlie Wilson, I think he has a, you know, he's unusual.
There goes
he's like
my
born
baby.
Again. Yeah, man. Then he did Unblessed and all that stuff. He just put a string of hits. And he just started looking young. It was weird.
Yeah.
It was weird. It was weird. It was weird.
I'm like, that guy, Steve Harvey. Another joker that doesn't seem to age. But how in the world
does he
judge, though?
I don't get that one. Well, you know, when you're hot, man, you're hot.
He don't need to be
hot.
Yeah, he don't mean to be like a judge, though.
I like that, man.
I don't think you're hot. You're not.
They didn't think that one out.
Yeah.
That's gonna come back to bite somebody.
Yeah, that's
Rob or
I know if I was Bill. Canadian, I would say that's
tough. I don't understand the judge thing.
Yeah,
but it's all reality TV, man.
They better be careful.
I'm a judge.
Your boy, what's your boy that be jumping on everything, talking junk about everybody? Leon, your boy.
Dave Chappelle. My idol.
Yeah.
Don't talk about my idol, man.
Dave Chappelle might jump on that. this nigga. Oh, that nigga talk about you, dude.
I'm a judge. Hey, I just declared I'm a judge right now. I'm Judge Robert.
I know,
right? Robert Gigley. It's that easy. That's all you got to do. Just declare it.
Pretty much that simple, man. When you get that kind of money and that kind of following, it's kind of like, hey, you say what you want, you say you what you are, what you want to be. I'm a judge today, right?
I'm a brain surgeon, Robert. Just because I said it. That's right.
Yeah, man, I've got a lot to talk about tonight.
United States. I believe I'll be president. Seems like Joe Biden.
There you go, President Curtis.
Be president of the United States of America.
Hey, Curtis, the big question would be, who will stay behind if Curtis
Gates
is
president? I'll tell
you one thing.
I think your people will be in pretty good shape. Reparations will be on the pound of the totem pole. Y'all will be doing fine. I got an idea who will be. What they call it. Them countries be succeeding. Those states be succeeding. A few of them wanted to succeed when Obama was president. Texas and a few of them. They're like,
what'd
we don't
do,
want no
cut
black
them off.
President.
What'd you do, Curtis? Cut them off the map.
Man, I tell you, I don't think I'll have
cut
to.
Them off the map.
I think they'll be getting up out of here. Because they'll be making some real change. Finally, once and for all, Negroes.
Negroes,
Felicia. Yeah. It might sound like a crazy question, Curtis, but how much money are we looking at here as reparators?
You know what?
How much money are we looking at here?
If our president, Leon, this is what we would do. We would attack that defense budget. That defense budget, that's where we're playing out these trillions of dollars. In line and acting like the people overseas are our enemies while we're being killed over here in America by the KKK, bad police officers, and confused Negroes. That money would come out of the pot into the streets. Reparations, preventive, early childhood prevention, all this stuff, man. I would go right at that defense budget.
Tell you one thing, Curtis. Your organization, Stop Killing Us, if we ever need a moniker or a handle or a slogan, your organization name summed it up. It's like everybody killing us. COVID.
Yep.
The police. The racist.
It is.
The black folks.
You're
killing
right,
each
brother.
Other.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Man.
Man.
Everything.
Ladies
yep.
and gentlemen, you're listening to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. Welcome, guys. Welcome to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. Before we get started, I want to let everybody know this is the Brothers for Real Radio Show. You have Joseph, Robert, Leon, and Curtis Gatewood on the line tonight. We want to get as many people to join us online tonight. I'm going to say this, like I always say, we really like talking to each other, but just to get one of you guys to call in and talk to us every now and then would be great. The number to call is 215-383-3872. Yes.
Leon, I want to tell people to text somebody right now. Get on your Facebook and share that that link that Leon sent out, or tell them about that number you just gave them, Leon. I think the people need to get on the line tonight. We need to talk.
Yeah, we
everybody
need to talk.
Who's
we need
listening,
to talk.
Tell somebody. Everybody who's listening,
tell
please
somebody.
Tell somebody to tune in right now.
Yep, and you do the same.
Okay.
Tell everybody we need to talk tonight. Well, we're going to talk every night. But look, things are getting kind of hectic.
Yeah.
You know what that's on.
Yeah.
It's getting kind of hectic. Yes, sir.
I'm checking out your theme there, brother. Staying alive in 2022. What's on your mind, man? You got something on your mind over there?
Well,
like,
let me say this.
You got something on your mind there, bro.
Let me say this,
Robert.
Like,
stop killing
let me say
us.
This, Robert.
It sounds like...
Yeah, let me say this, Robert. Let me say this, everybody. When I was reflecting this week, and I sent out a couple of text messages to some people that had lost their mothers,
wow.
And I was just sending out text messages. You know, some people, you know, in this busy world today, sometimes we fail to reach out to some of the people that really are suffering. You know, from simple things, God forgive me for saying that, for normal things like losing your parents, you know, a son, a sister,
mm-hmm.
a brother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I actually started, I thought about Aaron. You know me, Aaron? Y'all remember your brother, Aaron?
Yeah,
oh,
sure.
Man.
Aaron.
Don't be crying, man.
That was Aaron. In fact,
yeah.
February is going to be his unfortunate transition anniversary in February.
Yeah, he died in 1975 or so. Anyway, we'll get to that. But, guys, let's try to convince the world to, or the communities to know that those things are still happening to people. And I wish I could forget people like Trump ever existed. When I say that, forgive me, Trump, people, he just was my best target at the moment. People that you are used to distract us from things that are really meaningful. We really need to
using their power to, and their, not, in addition to distracting us, using power to exploit divisions that already exist and to add flames to the divisions and racism and the escalation of terrorism and all this other stuff. All right, but go ahead, bro.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm gonna stop right there. I see Joseph Gatewood is joining the call. You know, it's me, Gary. Joseph Munyon, how you doing, bro?
What's going on, Leon?
What's going on, Curtis? Munyon?
Joseph.
Interesting. The Munyon is here.
Yep.
The Munyon is here. It's interesting that I mentioned Aaron because Joseph and Aaron were like, hey, just like the rest of us. But Joseph and Aaron had a special bond. They did. We have to admit it. They had a special bond. Those guys hung tight, just like Robert and myself and Curtis did. But I remember when Aaron left me and Curtis in the cold, but anyway, we won't get into that.
That is right. Big Rich Croak Shack
in Loudville.
You're right there,
yeah,
in Loudville.
We'll never forget it.
It was
right
cold
there in Loudville. It was colder than a wet witch's nose on October 31st. Yes, sir. It was cold. It cost 50 cents. We didn't have 50 cents. Anyway, we'll talk about that. No, it wasn't. It was 50 cents that night, bro. I remember. I distinctly remember.
We didn't have 50 cents.
Man, this was 1974.
Boy.
Hello. Man, this was 1974.
You got to go back further than 1974, man.
The slaves had 50 cents.
I'm getting ready to say. It was a weekday, man.
It was a weekday. This was Big Rick Croak Shack.
Acting like 50 cents was too hard to come by. We're not that old yet.
This was Big Rick Croak Shack. Croak Shack on a weekday.
Kunta Kinte had 50 cents, man. Kunta Kinte had 50 cents. Come on, man.
Yeah, you're right, Joseph.
I I saw Kunta Kinte. Kunta Kinte was in the croak chat, man. He was in the croak chat, but y'all had some issues, man. He was in there talking about how he wasn't, his name wasn't Toby.
We did, man. Yeah, it was rough.
Half a foot.
I know who shouldn't have 50 Cent. 50 Cent shouldn't have 50 Cent, but go ahead. That's another subject. Yeah, 50 Cent making big money.
I'm trying to get to my brother Joseph over here. He's mighty quiet. Joseph.
Yeah, I'm listening to what we're saying, Leon.
Yeah, I'm talking nonsense. Joseph,
yeah,
I was serious over there. Yo, you're talking nonsense.
Right. Yeah, I was talking about Aaron, and I know you had – you remember when – let me tell y'all what happened. Joseph can probably pick this story up. When I was – we were home.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron had probably been sick a couple of weeks in Chapel Hill in the hospital. And I mm-hmm. for you guys who are listening, there were 14 of us, 10 boys, 4 mm-hmm. girls. We had a brother named Aaron, and Aaron passed away in 1975. Anyway, I was at home, a kid, of course, around in the 11th grade, 10th grade, somewhere in there. And Aaron had probably been in the hospital a couple of weeks. And the people called from the hospital. That mom and dad left that day, that afternoon, to go visit Aaron in Chapel Hill at the hospital. And the people from the hospital called the house to say, hey, we're going to take your brother or whatever he is to you into emergency surgery. We need permission to do that. And I was the one who answered the phone. So I said, hey, mom and dad just left going to visit. So, hey, of course. I mean, you know, get it, you know, have at it. But the sad part about that story is Aaron passed away that night. And it was a terrible thing. But Joseph was there. Joseph.
Yeah.
You were there.
Yeah, the thing, yeah, man. When Aaron, it's a, you know, when, because the first night Aaron came to the hospital, it was January 25th, 1975. And that night, you know, I was a junior in college up at North Carolina Central University. And I was out, you know, with some friends. We were just, you know, doing what college students do. I won't go into any details. But right in the middle of us doing what we were doing, I just said, I need to call home. And everybody looked at me in, like, dismay and said, why do you need to call home? We just in the middle of what, you know, partying. I said, I just need to call home. So I called home that night, left our little party, whatever we were doing, went and called home. And when I called home, first question Mama asked me, she said, have you seen your daddy and Cynthia? I said, no, ma'am. I said, why would I see them? She said, because they had to take Aaron to Chapel Hill because he got really, really sick, and they took him to Chapel Hill, and your daddy and Cynthia are going up there. They're following the ambulance. I said, oh, my goodness. My good friend Herbert Sturdivant was with me that night. And I went and told Herbert, I just got worried that my brother was on the way to Chapel Hill Hospital. And so we jumped in that little station wagon and struck out to Chapel Hill Hospital. And when I got there, Cynthia was coming down the hall. And when she saw me, she acted as though she had seen a ghost. And she said, Joseph, how did you know that we were up here? And I said, well, I said, something just told me to call home, and that's what I did. But anyway, so that night, I stayed with Aaron every night, every day, because until he died, they put a bed in the room for me to sleep in. And so I just stayed in that cart, slept on that cart in that room with Aaron from January 25th to February the 8th. Well, of course, I didn't stay there February 8th that night because he died. But at any rate, I was in the room with him, and I left because I told Aaron, because it seemed like he was doing good. I said, Aaron, I said, seemed like you're doing pretty good. I said, so I'm going to go back over to the campus and, you know, get me some changing clothes and, you know, check up on a few things. And I said, I'm going to bring my chessboard back. I said, I'm going to teach you how to play chess. And he said, okay. And so I left. The first time I left Aaron, And then I came back, and when I went down to his room, the room was empty. There was no bed, and then I heard one of the nurses, when I came out the room and he wasn't there, one of the nurses whispered to the other nurse, they said, "Isn't that his brother?" And one of them said, "Yeah, that's his brother." And so I walked up to the desk and I asked the lady, I said, "Where is Aaron?" And she said, they just looked at each other. They didn't tell me anything. They just said, "Go have a seat over there." So while I was sitting over there, next thing I know, the chaplain came out. And the first thing the chaplain asked me, he said, "Are you here by yourself?" I said, "Yeah, I'm here by myself now, but my mom and dad is on the way." Anyway, mom and dad did get there shortly after that. And after that, the chaplain continued to talk to us, and then the surgeon came out. I don't know why he came out like that. He had blood all over his shoes. And he started explaining the dire situation to us. And so after he went left the room, Mama just said, she said, "She said, what they doing, Joe? Just running experiments on him?" I said, "Mama, I don't know. I just went in the bathroom and I just did all the crying that I thought I was going to do, because even though they hadn't said he was dead, I knew he was dead. So I did all the crying I thought I was going to do. And that's one thing about grieving. When you need to grieve, just grieve. Don't try to hold it in, because that was a mistake I did. And I ended up dreaming about Aaron every night for 10 years. I know at least that long. And while we were, and every night in one of my dreams, we were just doing all the little stuff, you know, that two little boys would do out in the yard playing, getting in all kind of mischief. But every time before I woke up, he was always dead. I could never wake up still alive. And going through that process, I dropped out of school, just laid around and was doing nothing. And then all of a sudden, some came to me and said, "Joseph, you need to get back in school, buddy." So I went back and then never told my professors or anybody on campus, you know, what had happened, because I couldn't talk about it. So I just went and told them I needed to get back in school. Because keep in mind, Aaron died February the 8th, and by the time I decided to go back to school, it was final exam time. And so when I went back to school, and I told my professors I need to get back in school, and all of them told me the same thing without me telling them anything, because I didn't tell anybody what had happened. And all of them just said, "Joseph, pass your finals. Pass your finals." That's what I did. I passed my finals. Got a lot of my professors to work with me, you know, writing letters for me and doing all kind of stuff to kind of help me get out of school. I won't go into all the details, but that's what happened. But the bottom line is, I always tell people, I say, when somebody close to you die, I always tell people, you're never going to get over it. I don't care what somebody tell you. Well, you need to get over that. You need to move on. You can move on, but you're never going to get over it. And you need to grieve however you need to grieve. Because if you're trying to hold it in, the only thing it's going to do is make your situation worse. And I always tell people, you know, just grieve however you want to grieve, and don't ever think you're going to get over it, but you do have to learn to live with it. And I've had some trying times in my life since then. Of course, I was diagnosed with colon cancer, which was a big, you know, fright. And of course, I had a colon resection, took chemotherapy, and doing all of that, I was never afraid. And, you know, and recently this is a subject I want to talk about. I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and the doctor said it was a very aggressive cancer. And everybody been asking
me. You mean you've recently been diagnosed with prostate cancer?
Pardon me?
You're saying you've recently been diagnosed with prostate cancer?
Yeah, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer Well, I went and took the prostate biopsy on December the 22nd, and they told me on January the 6th that I did, in fact, have prostate cancer. And they said it was a very aggressive cancer. And so because of that, they told me I need to get a complete body scan and a bone scan, because with prostate cancer, you know, it's typically just a very slow-growing cancer. But for whatever reason, I ended up with a very aggressive form of prostate cancer. And they thank God that I had a good doctor that was very proactive. Minute my PSA went above, I mean, just slightly over 4, he jumped into action. And that's something I want you boys to do. Make sure you go get examined, and, you know, and anybody else out here listening, make sure you get your physical examination and pay close attention to that PSA, because if that PSA goes anything over 4, you need to tell your doctor, you know, he need to do something. Don't just let him sit on it. But anyway, I went and got my, and thanks to my great daughters and my wife, because my wife, she worked in medicine for 45 years, and I have 2 daughters, both are RNs, and between them 3, I was able to, along with the help from my doctors, I was able to get in very expeditiously to get the necessary tests done that I needed. I got a bone scan yesterday, and I got a full body scan yesterday. And the good news was that the cancer had not metastasized. In other words, it's still confined to that general area. It hadn't moved outside of the general area. It hadn't moved to any other organs, and it hadn't moved into my skeletal system, which is something that the doctors always look out for. And tomorrow I'm to go to see my primary physician, and he's going to be coordinating with my urologist, which I go back to see him on Tuesday. And they're going to try to come up with what type of treatment, you know, that I need to prevent it from spreading. Maybe surgery, maybe radiation, maybe it can be chemo. I don't know at this point, but I'm just like man Invictus. I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. So having said all that, folks, just like you were talking about earlier, we are under assault from all angles, and that's another one of the angles that we are under assault is health care. If you get some type of sickness or illness, you have to be very proactive. You're going to have to pretty much take charge to make sure that you get the treatment that you need. You have to stay on top of these doctors, these hospitals, these clinicians, everybody. You just can't sit around and wait, because to them, you're just another number. But to you, you are somebody's husband, you're somebody's wife, or you're somebody's mother, you're somebody's father, you're somebody's grandfather, somebody's grandmother. And so when you have these health situations, please, please get on top of it. Get on top of it. Don't wait. Get your men, get your PSA checked on a regular basis, get your colonoscopies, that's for everybody, and just take good care of yourself. You know, if you smoke, stop. If you drinking, cut down on it. Start exercising, losing weight, doing all that stuff, because the biggest factor with prostate cancer is hereditary. And, you know, really there was no way for me to get out of it, really. And this is another thing I want you boys to understand. If your brother has prostate cancer, it's more likely that you would get it, more so that you would get it if your father had it. Now, if your father had it, you might get it. But if your brother had it, your chances of getting it increases exponentially. So that's one thing you want to keep in mind. You boys got to be more careful.
That ain't right.
Nope, it ain't.
I mean,
right.
I see what you're saying, man, but I don't like that. I don't like that.
What you talking about?
What you talking about? I'm saying I don't like that part about, you know, just because you're your brother, you might get it exponentially more likely to get it.
What you talking about, Willis?
But Joe, let me say this, brother. I am so, first of all, I hate you have it, and so proud of you for letting the way you are handling it as far as sharing the information so that we would know to pay attention to it. Not only us, but the whole wide world to know.
Yeah.
I just read a post from our dear friend, Kim Richardson, who has been going through breast cancer, it appears, and she got to ring the bell today, which I'm assuming means she's free now. Mm-hmm. She's a survivor and has broken clear of it. So great news for her. Congratulations to her and everybody else who's surviving this monster of cancer. But Joseph, like again, I'd like to say to you, thank you for coming out and sharing this information with us.
Well, Leon, you know, when I was dealing with colon cancer, my first impression was, just like a lot of people, impression is, you know, when they got sick or some type of illness, they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to share it with other people. And I can understand that because, you know, a lot of times people are embarrassed about, you know, having certain type of illnesses, and, you know, for whatever reason. Because, you know, all of us would like to appear strong. But when I was diagnosed, like I said, my first reaction was I didn't want to tell anybody. I told Tajma, you know, because she was running the office for me at the time. I said, don't tell anybody. If anybody called, that's where I am. You just tell them that I'm out and I'll be back as soon as I can. But then all of a sudden I thought about this. I said, I can use this in a positive way. And so I told Tajma, I said, if anybody call you and ask them where I am, I said, you tell them that I was diagnosed with colon cancer. I said, you tell them I had a colon resection where they went in and took out part of my colon, and now I'm taking chemotherapy. And I said, you tell them just like that. And then when I finally got back to the office, I put posters in my office telling people about getting a colonoscopy. I put passing out brochures on, you know, I had brochures in there that people could pick up talking about colon cancer, you know, and how good your chances of are surviving if it's detected in time. And the same way with prostate cancer. If you detect it in time, you got very good, your odds are in your favor. But anyway, I know of seven people at least that came to me and said, Joseph, because of the information you gave me, I went and got tested. They found polyps, and they were able to remove them before they became malignant. My landlord, you know, the guy that was I was renting my office from, he went and got tested. And, of course, and he had polyps, and they were removed, so he never had no colon cancer. The guy that runs the insurance school up here in Charlotte, he came to me one day in church. He said, Gatewood, thank you for that information. He said, I went and got tested, and he said, I did, in fact, have polyps. And he said, they removed them, and I don't have no, I didn't have to go through no chemotherapy. I didn't have to go through no surgery or nothing. He said, I appreciate that information. And that's the reason I'm talking about this tonight. Because, you know, I told my wife, I said, I'm not ashamed. I said, anytime something negative happens, there's a way you can turn it into something positive if you look for it. And I think by me sharing this information, hopefully it'll keep somebody else from having to go through what I'm going through.
Well, Joseph, I did go get checked for a colon, you know, got my colonoscopy after I realized you had cancer, and I would be coming to consider myself crazy not to. And, of course, I had polyps, and they removed the polyps, and I'm very grateful for that. And here you go again, getting to save our lives again, hopefully. I have one question, it's a short one. How did you know that little man that came out of the room was the chaplain?
Huh?
You said a little when you said you were at the hospital, a little man came out, the little chaplain came out of the room. And how did you know it was a chaplain?
Big cross around his neck, probably gave him away.
He had that little funny looking head on his head. And,
See,
yeah,
what?
Thing, you know,
it was a Halloween, man. He probably
was
his outfit.
He probably said it.
You know, he came out here with a funny looking hat. You know, and I didn't know nobody wore no hat like that.
Spraying holy water on everybody.
Right. And he sat down with me. But, you know, I was saying to myself, you know, I mean, I was just going through, you know, I didn't want to tell him, man, I didn't want to hear what you're talking about.
Why you don't want to hear the man?
Man. I think they could have been a little more discreet, really.
Right.
Hey, let me say something, guys. Let me say something.
Yeah, man.
Joe, first of all, I have always seen you as like the second string OG, because anybody who's familiar with our family, we had 14 of us, and Joe was right at this. He was the OG, the first one of the second seven. he was like the second generation. We had, our family was so big, we had a generation within two generations in one family. But Joe was like the OG of the second generation. And so numerically between Aaron was sandwiched between Joseph and myself. And so Aaron was like he was like the partner to me as well. And I always, he was like, when he left, I'm telling the truth, guys, I went into like a withdrawal, and I'm sure the family probably noticed that. And that I didn't want to deal with anybody. I was totally devastated, and really Joseph was kind of like the one that kind of helped bring me out, to tell you the truth, because I was in total denial. I did not handle it well. I think I had one crazy getting drunk spell, but other than that, I just kind of withdrew. And I did, like everybody, once you face death, you start becoming cognizant of your own mortality. And you start wondering if you're going to be next. And I think I started having an aversion even to going to get checkups, because I thought, I don't want to find anything wrong with me, because that's going to mean my number is going to be called soon. And so I've always, when Aaron departed, I was kind of had to skip over my closest brother and go to Joseph. And so he became like the default next in line. And it was a struggle, I must say. It was a struggle. And I kind of went through this period of withdrawal. But I can tell Joseph has been, even to this day, the one that's kind of tried to pull me back into the fold. I'm the one that left town, came over to D.C. Everybody else kind of stuck around. And that was all part of that. I think just part of that just denial and fear of death and what's going to happen to me next. And so you do have to, Joseph said it right, you don't get over it. But what you have to do is draw on your support systems. Like Joseph, who's always been there to kind of pull me back in line and say, look, man, this, you got to shake this off. And I mean, he never said that, but I knew that's what he was. He did it by his actions and his words. And so when I heard about his having the colon cancer years ago, of course, that shook me. I mean, I think it almost sent me back into withdrawal. But what it did, it took me into action, and I started taking my own health more seriously. And I went and got a colonoscopy, and now I was telling Leon, I just had one of those tests that they send you in the mail where you do the colonoscopy, where they do the test and you mail it back in. I just did like 2 days ago, just put it in the mailbox 2 days ago. It sat on my desk for like two, 3 months. And something just told me,
bro,
you better put that thing back in. I'm telling you, man, it's crazy.
How that thing work?
It's irrational.
How that work, bro? How that work,
man,
bro?
They can't get on the radio.
You don't want to know. You don't want to know.
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't. You got to. You have to go Google that one, because that's not something you want to explain on the air. But you don't want to do it. It's a way you can take a test to check for colon cancer without having to invasive or even go into the medical facility. So I just done that recently. So make a long story short, just to kind of, without getting too long on this, the Aaron, we are coming upon his the anniversary of his demise in next month. He was a very close brother to me, and I remember when I found out, I was in college. I had just left the hospital to go back to school because I had come to visit him. I think I became famous because the minute I saw him in his condition, I fainted, and they had to put me in the room across the hall until I came through.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of a shock to my system. I think everybody they had a reserved room over there for us to faint and go over there and recuperate.
Yeah, all of us fainted.
Everybody fainted.
I fainted. Fainted. You fainted. Curtis fainted. Everybody fainted.
Yeah. We all
fainted. I was talking by myself when I fainted. Aaron had a real bad episode, and I was standing there, and I mean, I was just in complete shock. And they said, "Get him out of here! Get him out of here!" And that was the last thing I heard. And after that, I was flat on my back on the floor. And when I looked up, I probably had more nurses and doctors around me than Aaron had. So they had the whole ward, all the doctors in the hospital was on that floor between me and Aaron.
But you know what? But Leon, that's why when you said the theme of the show, staying alive in 2022, I think was very discuss our brother Aaron and what Joseph is going through now, the challenges he's going through. This is a clarion call to people who are not taking their health seriously, and to remember this is not just about you.
That's
right.
Remember
the people you leave behind. The people you leave behind, they pretty messed up for a while. So if you don't take it seriously yourself, you take it seriously for your brothers, for your wives and husbands and mothers and fathers and children and nephews and cousins and grandparents. You have to take care of yourself. That means don't put yourself in these unnecessary risky situations. Don't be out here engaging in road rage. Don't be out here doing things that you know are dangerous, playing with drugs and guns and doing all kind of crazy things. And you
walk
definitely
around with
have
no
to
mask
take care of
not
yourself.
Taking the, hey, Robert, walk around
right.
with no mask and not taking the vaccination. That's crazy stuff we're doing.
You're doing it to yourself. You're doing it to the people you leave behind because you're going to be gone. You're going to be up there in heaven or wherever, chilling. We down here on earth have to deal with it. Take care of yourself.
Right.
Leon, your theme is very good. Stay alive in 2022.
Take care of yourself. And since you know you got to leave anyway, make sure your finances are in order. Make sure you're not leaving behind people that are going to have to be. Anyway, you're going to leave a lot of debt behind and no way to cover it. You know you're going to die. Everybody's going to die. You're going to die. Just look at it. Look at yourself in the mirror and say, I'm going to die one day. And since I'm going to die, I'm going to make sure I have things in order. It's already going to be difficult when you die on the people that you leave behind. Don't make them have to go around scraping up money to bury you. Please, guys, come on. We got to do better.
Come on.
Let's do better, man.
Let's do better, man.
Robert, we listen to the Brother for Real radio show. We're going to take a quick break right now before we change gears. And we'll be back in a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Brother for Real radio show. This is 215-383-3872, the number you need to call to talk live. We'll be right back, as they say. Did I say like a real DJ? We'll be right back. We attracted to things that bring the trauma. Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism, but we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA, the Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate. And to discriminate only generates hate. And when you hate, then you're bound to get outraged. What you demonstrate, and that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love just to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all. People killing, people dying, children hurt, and you hear them crying. Can you practice what you preach and what you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us. Guidance from above. is that love, man? Where is that love? Ladies and gentlemen, again, you listen to the Brothers For Real Radio Show. The number to call is 215-383-3872. We got the brothers on the line. I'd like to thank Joseph for sharing his information with her, with us. That is not an easy thing to do, man, because I think it was hard. I'm finding out it's really hard for people to do. Tell people they have COVID. That is killing me. But anyway, people, that's why, guys, I'm going to tell you guys this. You have to really be careful around everybody because if people have COVID, they won't tell you. I don't know why.
That's right.
They think it's
Leon,
like,
let me say something, COVID. Leon.
Yes, sir.
Leon.
Yes, sir.
Let me say this. My youngest daughter, she's a nurse over there at University Hospital.
Yes,
in
sir.
Charlotte, right up north of Harris Boulevard and North Tryon Street.
Yes, sir.
She said they had three people die from COVID right there at that hospital in one day. Three died from COVID, age 30, 40, and 50. One in the 30s, one in the 40s, one in the 50s. Three of them died that day, and they all had one thing in common. Guess what
that
was? They had not been vaccinated. That was the one common denominator. So
well, that
people still running around here talking about, I'm not going to get vaccinated because people still getting the COVID with the vaccination. Well, keep in mind, this vaccination is just like any other vaccination. There is no such thing as any vaccination having a 100% efficacy. And secondly, they are really not designed to keep you from getting the virus. What they're designed to do is to mitigate the complications that come along with having the virus. So people out here saying, talking all this foolishness about they don't know what's in it, or it took them too long they developed it too quick. Just like my daughter said, there was a lady in the hospital with the COVID. And she asked her why she hadn't taken the vaccination. She came with some of this crazy foolishness. Of course, they got talking points. All and seemed like they're passing that foolishness from one person to one person. Where the first thing she said, she didn't know what's in it. So my daughter said, she asked her the question, do you know what's in the treatment that we're giving you up here? If you don't believe in medicine, why did you come to the hospital?
Hey, Joe, I can break it down lower than that. Little fella sitting there talking to me one day, said he wasn't going to take the COVID test, take the vaccine, because he didn't know what's in it, sitting there drinking a Mountain Dew. I said, man, what is in that Mountain Dew? I mean, seriously. Drinking a Mountain Dew.
Did you do your research on the Mountain Dew, buddy?
Only thing I said,
do you know how much sugar is in it? Do you know how much caffeine is in it? Do you know how much artificial stuff is in
it? They know nothing in it. No nothingness in it.
I had a guy that had been in the military. He's come telling me that same dumb stuff. I mean, they just got dumb. It's amazing how passing along ignorance is more contagious than the virus. But this guy sitting there taking the news, I don't know what's in it. I knew the guy. I knew he smoked weed. I knew he drank liquor. I knew he had been in the military. I said, hey, have you been in the military? Yeah. I said, did you take vaccines then? Yeah. I said, when you go out here on the street and buy this weed, I said, do you check to see what's in it, what it's been laced with? No. When you go down to the store and buy your bottle of Jack Daniels, do you go and research the distillery up in Tennessee to find out what all they put in there? No. So why you need to know what's in this vaccine?
That's what I heard on the internet.
I said my wife has been in medicine all her life. I said, I got two daughters that's in medicine. I have a very close relationship with my personal physician, with my primary care doctor. My godson is a noted scientist. He's actually made presentation before the UN, and all these people are recommending take the vaccination. I said, so if I got that much information with my wife, two daughters, my doctor, and my godson, that's a scientist, came one of the youngest PhDs in the country, I said, I have access to that kind of information, so why would I take my lead from some crackhead off the internet on Facebook?
I have no idea who they listen to, Joseph. They have no idea who these, they have not vetted these people at all that they sit there and listen to. Get this information from. No idea whatsoever. Like, Joseph, the word efficacy you use, man, what that mean?
The word actually means effectiveness.
Okay, then, I want to make sure. Yeah, you know.
Hey, Joe,
like,
I got a question.
My friend,
I got a question for you, Joe.
What?
Hey, that PSA level. What test do you take to determine that?
Okay, now PSA. Let me tell you about my situation. Now, my PSA was hanging around like 2.5, something like that, 2.8. And then, because I go to the doctor every 6 months, you know, because I have had a lot of help.
What test do you take for a PSA? Is it a PSA test?
No, it's, you know, what they do is when you go in for your physical, they do they draw your blood, and they send it to the lab.
Blood test.
Yes, it's a blood test, and of course, and not only does it, you know, it tells you know what your cholesterol is, you know your hemoglobin level, you know, your kidney creatinine levels and all that kind of stuff is in there. But it's also
so
it has your
special,
huh?
So no special, it's no special test you take. They do that when they draw your blood. They can tell
exactly
what your
right.
PSA
no
level is.
They just look, check to see what, if you're a male, they look and see you know what your PSA level is. Now, if your PSA, the normal range for PSA is below four. And I have to give some kudos to my doctor. My PSA went to 4.1. I mean, less than a point over normal. It went to 4.1, and he jumped into action. And I was going, I said, this dude is overreacting. I said, I'm only at a 4.1. That could be... that could be an error. That just, but anyway, he jumped into action. The first, he started treating me for prostatitis, and of course, that's an infection of the prostate. And of course, put me on antibiotics for about 30 days. Came back, my PSA had gone up again. And when that happened, that's when he sent me into the urologist to get a prostate biopsy. And but. The answer is they can do it. They can do it when they do a blood draw, and if that PSA is anything over four, you need to do some further research.
Okay.
Hey, so we're running out of time. I have two things I have to say. If it's all right, but you guys are giving some good information.
Hey, man.
Go ahead, bro.
Yeah, first of all, man, I'm just overwhelmed for one thing because I did, in fact, I was touched by Aaron as well. All of us had our different way to be touched by our brother Aaron, because another thing about Aaron is he kind of hung around the house a little longer than some of the other brothers. He might have gone to school for a while, then he might come back home, and so I was one of the ones that would be there when he came back home, and, of course, Leon and others. So Aaron had a different way of touching all of us. He was a man. He was strong. He was conscious. He did not take any BS. And, he was just a powerful role model, and I thank God for him. I do want to move on to something else. It's ironic that you guys spent a lot of time talking about, you know, dealing with COVID and how we can prevent some things. First of all, I had to use the little power that I do have. We had two events that were coming up, one on Sunday the 16th, and one on Monday, the King Day, on So both those events have been postponed or put off due to the fact they were indoors and we are experiencing an escalation in COVID and the variant. So therefore, I had to use an executive decision to postpone those. Of course, Leon and August had raised some issues about some escalating COVID cases that are going on in Nelson County area. I do know the same is going on here. So for those of you, and I know we have some listeners who are planning, possibly planning to come to our event scheduled for Sunday, that event has been postponed. We will give you further notice as we see things develop as they pertain to the COVID and, of course, some of the variants that are related. For those of you who may be listening from Durham, we had an event scheduled for 3 p.m. at the Calvert Apartments. Of course, that particular event has also been postponed. It was scheduled for Monday at 3 p.m. Also, Robert and I, you know, we were talking about Stop Killing Us, how that really had become a very powerful thing, and about what we need to do, and also it coincides with Leon's, of course, theme for tonight. I wanted to add to the discussion something that came up as a part of the discussion. We were talking about things people need to stop doing, whether it be, you know, stop drinking or stop, you know, doing a lot of things that we do in order to preserve our lives. I want to really talk to people who are doing drugs. It doesn't matter whether it's light stuff like marijuana or whether it's some hard stuff like, you know, cocaine or opioids. There is some serious things that are going on with drugs now. It's not cool. I don't know if people are familiar. Well, I do know you are familiar with fentanyl. When you see this word, F-E-N-T-A-N-Y-L, fentanyl, it is something that is causing, it is 50 to 100%, it is 50 to 100 times more potent than the morphine or other stuff that people would normally think that they would use to get high. And a lot of the fentanyl is being laced with some of the marijuana and the other stuff that people are using, and they may not even be aware of it. So it's interesting you talked about, do you know what's in the vaccine, but do you know if you're doing a drug, do you know what it's been laced with? And the fentanyl thing is killing people on the spot. So we've had more overdoses over the last year, probably, and most of it was linked to fentanyl being a part of the lacing of a particular drug, because they're using it on the streets. And, you know, you don't know what's in your drug. You couldn't possibly know a lot of times. And so what I'm saying to you is, if you use drugs and we're going into a new year, people usually look for new things to do into the new year. Do not use drugs, illicit drugs, unless they've been prescribed by a doctor. If you have a drug addiction, please receive rehabilitation. There are various areas that you can get it. Many instances, it's being provided. But if you have a problem finding a way to find rehabilitation, feel free to call the Stop Killing Us Solution Campaign. Myself, most of you know me, 919-939-6311. But people are dying from drugs like never before. And so that is another way we are dying. We are dying so many ways. I talk a lot about us dying at gunpoint. We also are dying at pinpoint when you have violent legislation that's passed that will cut off your health care, or that will cut off your wages, that will cut off unemployment benefits, that will cut off or do away with some of the ways in which the working poor were in fact getting some type of relief. All those things are being cut. So what I'm saying to you is, we have a legislative way of being killed at pinpoint through the signage of bad legislation. We also, as you can see on the streets, we've had at least three police-involved shootings in the North Carolina area over since Saturday. That's not even talking about how we are killing each other by the guns of self-hatred and ignorance. So there are just so many ways we're dying. And so what I'm saying to you is, while we may not be meeting in as planned, we still have a telephone. We still do things through Internet, Facebook, in other ways. Please feel free to contact me if there are questions about some of the things that might be killing us that we might need to look at. And as you can see, my brothers and others are very much on top of what is going on as it relates to ways in which we're being killed. So the key is we must stay alive. We must allow some dreams to come true in 2022, but they can't come true if we are dead.
Can't come true if we're dead. And, brother, they can't come true if we don't take our own destinies in our own hands. We got to, Joseph, help me.
Huh?
A lot of what is happening to you or the progress you're making is because you are taking this into your own hands, basically. I mean, I know you got that team, that powerful team with you, but that's part of taking it on into your own hands as well. So, people, we have to take our lives into our own hands because you're the one that should care the most. Remember.
That's right.
You're the one, it's your life. You're the one who must care. So, that's what we're going to do.
Don't do drugs.
We're out of time.
Let's start tonight. Do not do drugs.
Just say no.
That's the way to stay alive. Because you
just
don't know what's
no.
in it.
Love you, brothers. Y'all have a good night, man.
Good night, brothers. Take care. Stay healthy.
All right. How are you?
I'll talk to you later on, Robin and Curtis, to talk to y'all. More about this.
All right, brother.
Yeah, we need to talk. We need to talk.
You.